The Why Golf podcast is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels and cars so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal.
Hello, welcome to Why Golf, brought to you by Skyscanner. My name's Gabby Partington and I'm stepping in for Di this week. So some very big shoes to be filled in a special episode right here in the south coast of Spain at Real Club Valderrama. So this is where one of 14 LIV Golf events are being held. But the reason we're here today is to chat to YouTuber and pro golfer Rick Shields. Now, if you know golf, it's likely you know Rick. He's one of the most influential sporting voices in golf. And the reason we want to chat to him today is to discover his journey into the game, where he sees golf is going, and just about his role in general. So I think we should go and find him. Well, Rick, thanks for joining us. Only one of the best courses in the world as a backdrop to make your Why Golf debut. How's everything going?
Well, first off, yes, thanks for having me. And what a special place. Like, we're here at Valderrama. I've been here for the last few days and I've fallen in love with the place. It's unbelievable. So, loving my time in Spain, and I'm really happy to chat lots of things about golf.
Well, that's what we're here for. We're halfway through the season, halfway through the year. So how's the first kind of few months or 6 months of 2025 treated you?
Well, it's been quite a change this year. So at the start of the year, obviously I made the announcement that I've signed with LIV Golf as an ambassador. So It's a real transition. I've been doing golf YouTube for 13 years now. Really excited for a change, wanted a change, wanted something new and different. And when this opportunity came up, I kind of grabbed it with both hands, and it's been amazing. You know, I've got to travel the world. I've got to see so many amazing places. I know you travel quite a lot with your job
indeed.
As well, but I've been to places like South Korea this year. I absolutely loved it there. Like, it was one of the best places I've been to. Golf is crazy out there.
They love it. The superstores and stuff like that.
Have you seen the golf shops?
Unreal. They're driving centres, driving ranges in the hotels.
Yeah, so honestly, I loved going to there. Singapore, I went to Sentosa, which was this amazing golf course. Been to America quite a few times. Got to go to Virginia, where Robert Trent Jones Golf Club was, which is by far one of the most picturesque golf courses I've ever seen. It's almost like Augusta, but by a lake. And then being here, what feels like a home event, you know, it's a short flight just over here to Spain from the UK, and having the opportunity to play Valderrama for the first time last couple of days. Again, it is literally a bucket list course. It's one that most people say, have you played Valderrama? And I can finally say yes. And I've seen every tree and every bunker and every water hazard around this golf course, because it's bloody hard.
What are the other courses that you've played recently then before this?
So I've just come back from Dallas recently. I really enjoyed Dallas. It was hot. I'm kind of becoming a little bit more acclimatized to playing golf in the heat, because, you know, it's like from coming from the UK, like, we're not used to playing golf in the heat.
You look really tanned, by the way.
I know.
I was shaking.
If I took my watch off, it is literally, I've got like a white mark under my watch. And playing golf in the heat, it takes adjustment. And then playing on these incredibly fast greens. You know, I'm often playing a lot of these tournament week, so it's not easy. But, you know, I feel like my game's got much better. Not that that's not something I'm super passionate about. I want to play well. But at the end of the day, I want to make great content. I want to make entertaining and fun content for people to enjoy. And sometimes me chopping it around a golf course is actually really fun content. As much as it doesn't feel like it to me, the viewers often do really enjoy that as well.
Yeah, it's more of a human feel, isn't it? It makes everyone else feel better about themselves.
Yeah, I mean, when I'm going through those double bogeys and triple bogeys, that's definitely what I'm thinking, that I'm doing it for the viewer.
Character building,
definitely.
Before we touch into your role with LIV Golf and things like that, I'd like to really start and go back a few years of how you actually got into golf before your role as a golf YouTuber, really.
As in when I first got
when
into
golf? When you first got into golf. Wow. We're going way back, aren't we?
Well, thank you. Wow. Well, I actually started golf when I was 11. So before that, always really into football. You know, I, as every kind of kid, certainly based in Manchester, we huge Man United fan, and everyone's dream was to become number 7 and playing at Old Trafford. And I soon realised I wasn't going to be good enough, and realised that team sports maybe aren't for me. And it was actually my mum that got me into golf.
Love that.
So my mum was with a partner at the time who played a bit of golf and booked us some golf lessons. And as an 11-year-old, I think I might have been 10 at that point, but as a 10-year-old, obviously I couldn't really be left at the house. So she took me to the driving range. As she had a golf lesson, I got a bucket of balls and an old club and stuck in a driving range bay and, like, keep yourself entertained for an hour. I was like, golf? It wasn't even on my radar. Like, I didn't even think about golf. Like, I was so obsessed with football that golf wasn't even on my radar. I was stood in this bay and I'm thinking, I don't even know how to hold it. I don't even know how to hit it, whatever. So I was bored out of my head. I really didn't enjoy it. And unlike every kind of fairy tale golf story, like, you hit that one shot and you're like, okay, that's actually quite nice. That actually felt good, and it went up in the air and it went 30 yards. And I was like, that was really nice. And hit a few more in that session. And I left the driving range kind of going, that was better than I expected. And then the next time my mum went for a golf lesson to the same place, instead of her dragging me there, I was more willing. I was like asking to go. And basically that's where I caught the golf bug. It was from that moment onwards. And from the age of 11 to now, at the age of 39, it's literally been my life. And I sacked football off, which I think was the best thing for me, really. I played golf all day, every day, certainly in summer holidays. Like, there's nothing better than playing golf in the summer in the UK and being dropped off at the golf club in summer holidays and having £2 to spend for your lunch and having chipping comps and putting comps and playing pool and playing 36 holes a day. And I just honestly loved it. And as much as I probably deep down knew I wasn't ever going to be a player, I always wanted to call golf my job. I always wanted to put my golf shoes on every day and call this my job in some capacity.
At what age did you think that you couldn't actually go on to make it? Is that something you wanted to do after the football thing went out the window?
Yeah, I think, again, as every junior golfer, they kind of want to, because I started in the eight. So when I was 11, it was 97. Mm. 97 is when Tiger won the Masters. It kind of, golf was really going through a boom. It was really becoming much more popular. It would have been very interested to see if my mum hadn't got me into golf at that point, would I have maybe found a different way into golf? Possibly. They might, you know, as golf became so much more popular. So age of 11, I started, you know, playing a lot more. And up until the age of 16, I thought I was pretty good, if I'm honest with you. I was pretty cocky. I was pretty confident. I was, you know, what my golf club, my local golf club, I was one of the best golfers. I had all these older members going, oh yeah, have you seen that Rick Shields? He hits it a mile and this, that and the other. And at 14, I was like, do I? All right, I'm pretty good at this game. And then at 16 years old, I went to golf college in Preston. There's a golf college called Myersco. And I went there again. I turned up with my Burberry t-shirt on. Burberry was popular, but, well, still is now, but it was kind of like really popular. And my Burberry hat on, highlights in my hair, two diamond earrings. I was very different back then.
We need to get a picture for this.
I don't know. There isn't one. I've burned
I'm going to do some digging.
And I kind of walked in there like Conor McGregor, kind of thinking I was the most confident golfer in the world, and really got a reality check when, you know, the first time we went on the golf course with another 20-odd, 30-odd students, me going, oh, there's better golfers than me. And at that point, it was a really important realization. I could have gone one or two ways. I could have worked harder. I could have practiced. I could have put more dedication, or I could have enjoyed myself at college. And I kind of went down that route. I was living away from home at 16 to 18. There was nightclubs just down the road. You know, fake ID got you into a lot of places. 50p a pints were more my kind of tipple. And between 16 and 18, I kind of enjoyed myself, learned a lot of life lessons, but didn't improve much at golf. And by the age of 18, I was like, I don't think I'm going to make it as a professional golfer, but I still want to call golf my job. Mm. So end up getting a job at 18, a lovely golf course in Knutsford in Cheshire. It's called Mere Golf and Country Club. And I was there and had great guidance from a couple of professionals there, Peter Eyre and Natalie Adams. And Natalie Adams was a super popular teaching professional. And it was at that moment I was like, quite like the idea of teaching golf, actually, because it kind of still gives me all the perks and benefits, yet I'm not reliant on my score to make money. So that's kind of really where I started to lean into coaching a lot more.
Okay, so when you first started coaching, how did you go from that transition from, you know, teaching in Bays in Manchester to then going on to being one of the global voices in the modern game?
Yeah, I mean, it was wild, really. I remember, so again, like most assistant professionals, I worked in a golf shop. At the weekend, I'd be, you know, the old saying of selling Mars bars and Cokes and everything else. But it was a beautiful setting. I mean, it was gorgeous. It was a very affluent club. A lot of very successful members there. Like, there was Sir Alex Ferguson was a member there and Sir Bobby Charlton. I saw footballers coming through there all the time. And it was real eye-opening. I grew up in Bolton. Mm. I didn't see any of that. I didn't see wealth. And, you know, you go into the car park at Mia, and Bentleys were called the Knutsford Mondeos. It's like you literally walked around and you saw all these Bentleys. And at the time, actually, Chubby Chandler, who is was ISM, a golf management company, he had a stable of pros. He had like Lee Westwood and Darren Clark and a few others, and they would practice there. So kind of from very... not a very golfy background. I didn't really know a lot about golf and didn't really surround myself with great golfers or, you know, money or wealth. I kind of then got thrown into, luckily got this job at Mir and got thrown into this new world. And I was like, whoa, there's more to life. Like there is more opportunities, there's more growth. And, you know, I play golf with business owners and I'd learned so much from them. And that really is where it kind of gave me the hunger to kind of pursue a career in business. And Natalie Adams, who was unbelievable with me, she was so nice. She still coaches now. And on a Sunday afternoon, she'd come in and she'd been coaching kids pretty much all morning. And I was there in the shop again, selling Mars bars. And she wasn't doing it out of anything other than just counting the money out of the back pocket every day. She'd whack down on the table a big wad of cash and checks. And my eyes were just dribbling. Like, holy, what is this? And she'd count it out, all the 20s, all the 50s. I've never seen a 50-pound note. And all these 50-pound notes and all these checks, I'm like, I want that. Like, that looks good. And she just coached and she worked hard and she built up a business and she loved it and she enjoyed it. And, you know, and I kind of looked at that as inspiration. I was like, wow, I want to do that. Like, I think that's amazing. And you're helping people and you're giving people, you're not only making good money, but you're actually giving people hope that they can play great golf. So I did a few years coaching at Mia, coaching kids, coaching juniors, coaching beginners, just loving it, like genuinely loving coaching. And they had some redevelopment there. They were building a hotel and it was kind of moving a little bit more to a resort rather than actual proper golf club. So an opportunity came up to a massive driving range near the Trafford Centre in Manchester. So I got the job there. And when I started there, I was like, this is a whole new ball game. Like, I'm only teaching now. I'm not working in the shop. My revenue relies on coaching and that's it. And at the time, to become a well-known golf coach, you'd really have to be on the front of golf magazines. It's the only way you knew who golf coaches were. And the internet had only really just kind of started to kick off, etc. This was about 2012, 2013. So kind of internet was still in its infancy. And golf magazines were the only thing. So I was a 26-year-old lad. I reached out to all these golf magazines, Today's Golfer, Golf Monthly, Golf Digest, got like every golf magazine, and I basically put myself forward, like, can I feature in your golf magazine? You know, I feel like I've got a lot to offer, I work at this massive driving range, this, that, and the other. And basically got crickets from everybody. Like, no golf magazine. Yeah, tumbleweed from everybody. And I was like, oh, okay, that was a tough pill to swallow, but I was like, okay, well, that's fair. And in reflection, I didn't offer anything. I was just another 26-year-old golf professional, teaching professional. Like, I didn't teach anyone on tour. I didn't have a crazy story. I was just another run-of-the-mill PGA golf professional. So it was at that point, I've always been super passionate about social media. You might be too young for this, but like when MySpace was out, I was like all over MySpace, yeah. Like designing your page and putting music on there.
What was your username?
Oh, I can't remember. Can you remember your username?
I think mine was like Mini Davenport 101 or something like that. Wow. I love tennis.
Honestly, I can't.
I was never Mini.
I wouldn't know, but I had all this. So I loved all that sort of things. And when Facebook came out, I was like, wow, this is game changing. I remember being like, one of my friends group to be on Facebook and be on MySpace, and the first of my friends group to be on Twitter, and the first of my friends group to be on YouTube. And I love that world, and I always loved technology. Like when the first iPhone ever came out, I was like, I've got to get that. Like, that's amazing. And ever since, I've almost had the newest iPhone since. I've always been addicted to kind of technology, and I've always been weirdly addicted to social media. Not addictive, but very interested in it. So then once the golf magazines had kind of said no and slammed the door in my face, rightly so, I turned to YouTube, and I wasn't the first YouTuber. No. When I first started, there was probably about three or four other YouTube channels. So Mark Crossfield being one of them, Me and My Golf, who've done fantastic. They were another pair who were on YouTube. Very little Americans. It was mainly YouTube, UK. And it was a lot of people like me, PJ golf professionals, who wanted to share their tips and their ideas. So I thought, I'm going to dive into that. And it was all about filling my teaching diary. Like, the reason why I was doing that, to get busier as a golf coach, to fill my teaching diary, because I didn't have the shop hours to rely on anymore. So you couldn't make revenue from it. YouTube wasn't a revenue stream. So I grabbed my iPad and I started making videos, and I didn't know how to make videos. I learned from YouTube how to make YouTube videos, but loved it. Absolutely loved it. From the very first video, I was like, that was good. From the idea to the filming to the editing to the releasing of the content to the 10 views that I got on the first video, I was like, 10 people have watched my video.
Oh, man.
Yeah, me probably 9 times. 10 people. And I was like, you get a comment, and I'd reply to every comment. It'd be like, oh my God, this is like amazing. It was like a game. It was like a video game that I was playing. I was like, I want to make the next video. And I made the next video, and the next video, and the next video. And I was like, this is amazing. Earning nothing, losing money. Like, losing money at that time, because I was spending time making these videos, editing them, paying for equipment. And it was the light bulb moment where I had a phone call. I used to put my phone number on all the videos, and I got a phone call. And it was a guy from Newcastle who'd seen my video and said, can I come and book in a golf lesson with you? And I was like, it's worked. It's bloody worked. Like, somebody outside of Manchester wants a golf lesson with me. And he has to drive past hundreds and hundreds of golf professionals to come and see me. But he wants to come and see me. And I was like, this is great. And he arrived, and we had a great lesson. And I asked him why did he, but he said, I really liked what you said on YouTube. And, you know, it made sense. And I felt comfortable coming seeing you because I knew how you delivered a golf lesson. And the biggest thing for me as well, and that he was the first guy of hundreds and thousands of people who in the end came and saw me for golf lessons from YouTube. But what was really valuable is how much they trusted what I said, like from the off. Like, there was never any hesitation. If I told them to stand on one leg and spin around 3 times and hit a ball, they would, because they were so invested in what I said, which was just like game changer for me. So kind of, I got addicted to making videos. It was filling my teaching diary really nicely. And I was like, this is just amazing. This is working really nicely.
So you kind of started a bit of a trend then, but the real passion at the beginning was from coaching. It wasn't necessarily to be a golfing personality, was it?
I hated the term YouTuber.
Or influencer.
I don't.
Was that a thing? Was that a thing?
God, I hate the word influencer. It wasn't.
No.
That's become much more kind of, I don't know. I always see influencers with negative connotations, if I'm honest. For me, I didn't want to be a YouTuber. I was a golf professional that made YouTube videos. That's how I would present myself and tell people. And to be honest, that was for many, many years. Like, the term YouTuber only really was comfortable in my vocabulary when it became more popular. I remember reading an article a few years ago, and it's like the number one job aspiration for people at school was to become a YouTuber. And I'm walking around.
Top of the pyramid.
I'm walking around not wanting to be that. And I think then I kind of lent into it a little bit more. And obviously I don't coach. It kind of got through COVID years and I don't coach anymore. But I was like, yeah, I am a YouTuber. I'm kind of quite proud of it. And yeah, it was a wild journey.
I assume you don't put your number at the end of each video anymore, do you?
No, but if you look back far enough, you will find it. But yeah, I've had my number since I was 11, so I don't want to change it. It was a wild ride. And, you know, a few years after the first video got released, YouTube became a monetized platform. So adverts started to show up on videos. And I remember getting the first check from YouTube, virtual check, and it was like, oh, okay, that's nice. Like, that's... I didn't expect that, because I was using it as just a marketing tool. I wasn't using it as a revenue stream. This was directly, I was using it as a marketing tool. So if anything, it was costing me money, but I was like, well, it's fine. Like, it's working. I'm paying X amount to make videos, but in return, I'm getting these lessons coming through the door. So it's paying for itself. Then when my marketing tool became a revenue stream, I was like, hold on a minute. My marketing now is making me money. This is bloody great. So then it was like, well, I'm doing 6 days a week coaching now and doing YouTube when I could. I didn't have any kids at the time, this, that, and the other. So it was like, well, what about if I did one less day coaching and really focused on YouTube a bit more? And then it was like, well, this is great. Now I'm making enough to do another day less coaching. And over the time, that kind of tipping scale slided where I became 100% YouTube and not doing any coaching, which is a shame because I love coaching. It's what really got me into it. But at the end of the day, like, if I was to coach now, it'd have to be at a weekend. I've got three kids. It's a bit harder with family time. But yeah, it was kind of, it went full circle. What was meant to be my marketing became my revenue stream.
How amazing is that you kind of started that, you created it? You didn't really have too much to compare it to, did you? And right now, if someone wanted to, you know, start up to be a golf YouTuber, there's so much out there to compare. It's really difficult. But back then, it would have been equally as difficult in a different way, because like you said, when you're writing to all these golf magazines, no one's replying to you. They're all airing you. But the fact that you've done that, you know, was it first golf YouTuber to reach 1 million subscribers on YouTube? Like, how have you managed to generate that USP then and like reach out to certain audiences and kind of gravitate towards them?
Yeah, I think consistency is definitely one. Again, I've been doing it for 13 years. I've released 2,500 videos on my YouTube channel. A lot of my content is to help either people get better at golf by educating them or entertaining them. At the end of the day, like, either I try and help people get better, or I want people to sit back and just enjoy a video. And luckily enough, opportunities arise where you get to go and play nice golf courses or play against nice people. And, you know, viewers on YouTube love that. And, you know, as much as I have changed, you know, I'm older than what I was when I started.
Wiser.
Got wiser. I'm a bit more comfortable in front of camera. You know, it's that consistency and always trying to come up with strands of content that the viewer didn't know they wanted yet. So, you know, the viewer potentially didn't know they wanted these matches against professional golfers. And it's like, we need to come up with a format that makes it fun and fair. So this kind of 10-shot challenge kind of came into fruition, where I take on a tour pro and I start 10 on the par, they start level par. And it shows. I've never, again, probably when I was 14, I would have told you I'm the best golfer on the planet, incorrectly. And now, no, I'm nowhere near that. So actually showcasing these superstar golfers and saying, I'm okay, I can get around the golf course, but these guys are 10 shots better than me. It shows the levels to this game, which is fantastic. Came up with a concept to break 75, where, again, if I break 75, I'm over the moon. I'm really happy with that. So going around these different golf courses, whether it's in the UK or it's in America, all around the world, like, that kind of strand the content's really good. I do a lot of equipment reviews, so I love testing equipment. We've set up a new channel just to test equipment. It's called the Hit Channel. So it's kind of everything, but everything and everything golf, really. And it's funny, you said about the golf magazines before, like, after about maybe 3 or 4 years of doing YouTube, golf magazines did become interested.
That's a pretty women moment.
And it was a real, yes, real mic drop moment. I was like, oh, you come now.
Oh, now you come crawling.
And it's only recently I had another front cover again on Golf Monthly, I think it was, or Today's Golfer. And my kids are getting to an age now, like 10, 8 and 6, where I went into a news agent and I walked in and the magazine was there. And I said, oh, that looks like Daddy. And they were saying, it is. I went, no, I don't think it is. And I was like, really having a little fun with them. And it's like, they've become a little bit more accustomed to it. Like, they see the gold play button that you get when you get 1 million subscribers. Yeah. And because they're so much more into YouTube and tuned into it now, they like see it as like, oh my God, you've got a gold play button. Well, my favorite YouTuber watches has a gold play button. Like, it's given me a lot of credibility with the kids as well.
Your daddy cool.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we're a bit embarrassed still, but yeah, when dads at school come up to me and wanting a picture, they're a little bit embarrassed, but I think they deep down also enjoy it.
You mentioned you made like, what, over 2,000 videos. How do you keep the ideas flowing?
Sometimes it's really hard, if I'm honest. Like, you know, I always think of that in, like, let's say if I was a writer for Coronation Street, how do they keep coming up with these ideas? Like, but the writers change all the time. Like, there's never the same writers, but I suppose they've got the world of ideas to come up with, like a bloody train diving off a bridge or whatever, or something happening at the pub or whatever. Obviously, all my content's golf. It's golf related. Like, that's the number one pillar behind it all. So we try and come up with strands that are repetitive, that are consistent and have series. They really work. sometimes I've done videos that I thought was a great idea and they've absolutely flopped. Like, I did a video a couple of years ago where I tried to get hypnotized and then go and play golf.
Who with?
Well, weirdly, we didn't get a hypnotist. We actually did it on an online course and all this. It was a disaster. And after about a day, I was like, that video's terrible. So I pulled it down. Yeah, I pulled it down. And again, you mentioned before about starting 13 years ago and starting now. I actually don't know which is harder or which is easier. Because back 13 years ago, you could release anything. Like, anything kind of just... let's go and do a chipping challenge on that video. Great, let's go and record it. 10 minutes, off it goes. And you didn't know what the expectation was. You didn't know there was an audience out there. But kind of anything went. It was quite a nice time in YouTube because you just do anything. Any idea you had, you just film it. Where now, because you know there's an expectation level, if I was a new YouTuber coming into it now, when I started, there was 3 YouTube channels. I was probably the 4th or 5th. Now there's over 1,000 golf YouTube channels. 1,000. So, like, how do you stand out now? Like, I think that's really hard. And channels still do it. Like, there's lots of channels that still pop up now, and you're like, fair play. I thought this area was full, but you've come at it with a slightly different angle, or you've come at it with a new niche, and it's like, great, like, keep going. But I think you have to come at it with a new niche or a new angle now, because the traditional PGA golf professional has been done 1,000 times now, so it's quite hard, really.
And Rick, what's the selection process like? Because I can imagine when you first started, it was probably pretty difficult to get people to kind of agree to come on the show. But now, people are probably volunteering all the time. How do you choose who's best for the show?
I mean, it's whoever's got interesting stories. Obviously, you've got your headline names. Like, any time that you can get a major winner on, it's massive, you know, whether it's John Rahm or it's Bryson DeChambeau, or whether it's just a household name, is always going to do fantastic. But also, I've actually made some really good videos with lesser known people. Like, one of my top videos ever was actually Sam Horsfield, who now plays on the Majestic. So about 5 or 6 years ago, he was maybe top 100 in the world. He'd watched my channel for years, because he's a few years younger than me, and he said, I'm in Manchester, should we do some filming? So he reached out to me on Instagram. I said, I'd love to. So I said, what can I do with Sam Horsfield? Because at the time, he wasn't a big name, and it's like, I don't really know what to do with him. So we come up with a strand of, I've got a wonderful team behind me as well who come up with creative ideas. And we said, well, why don't we just take him to a normal golf course and see what an elite tour pro, a top 100 player in the world, can shoot around a normal golf course. Like, that's a great strand of content. And it ended up getting like 8 million views. I didn't hit a single shot in the video. It's brilliant. I just walked around watching him. Yeah. And it's like, I think anytime a piece of content asks an interesting question, I think it's going to do great on views. Like, can I beat John Rahm? Can I beat Bryson DeChambeau? They're interesting questions. People want to know, can you? Can you go and beat John Rahm if you have 10 shots? I don't know if you can. I always have this idea, I'm not into cycling so much, but if I saw a video on YouTube, it was a bike with square wheels, I'm going to watch it. So it's like, well, that can't work. Like, I'm sure there's probably examples in tennis or darts with that as well. Like, you know, how many bullseyes can I hit in a row, or can I hit the bullseye if it was twice as small, or how many times can I hit the bullseye from double the distance away? And it's like, yeah, I want to know if you can do that, or whatever it may be. So I think anytime you want, and I know if it's a good video, when I want to know the answer, like, I want to know what happens in that situation. What happens if I play golf and the hole's 3 times bigger? I want to know the answer to that. Like, let's go and film it. Like, I want to know if I only have 3 golf clubs and one of them I could only use once, what can I shoot? I want to know if I played golf without a putter, what could I shoot? If I played golf and every time I went in a bunker, it's out of bounds, what can I shoot? So it's like, it's those questions that are interesting. Like, well, let's make that into a video.
Must really improve you as a golfer.
You'd think it would. The hard bit, I don't practice. That's my issue. When I'm not filming, I'm kind of spending time at home and I'm spending time with the family. If I'm not, most of my golf is all on video. So I kind of need to somehow etch some time out to practice. When I'm at a live event like this, I can't get over how much the best players in the world practice. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's hours and hours and hours, and I've just not got that in me.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you come to a live event and there's so much noise around it. It's fun. I've been to a couple, and it's every time I've come, I've enjoyed it. And there's a really young crowd, so you wouldn't necessarily think or associate the hard work and practice and sacrifice that goes into an event like this for the players, do you? Because it's so much fun circulating it.
It's wild, and I must admit, I maybe put question marks out and said, "How much are these guys still interested? How much do they want to win?" God, they want to win. Like, you can see it. Like, they want to win. In the roasting hot heat, they will be beating balls for hours. And you're like, they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't care. Like, they want to win. It's the one thing that I've noticed with top-level professionals. They're so competitive. Like, they'll be so competitive you're going to play rock, paper, scissors. So when it comes to golf, they are just unbelievably competitive, which is what makes them the best.
Are you competitive?
I am. But weirdly not in golf.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you competitive in then?
I'm competitive in, like, I suppose YouTube. Like, I'm really competitive in the YouTube.
So if someone started breathing down your neck, you're a bit like, back off, buddy.
Always, yeah. Like, you know, I was really competitive when I wasn't the biggest channel. I wanted to be the biggest channel. When I became the biggest channel, I wanted to get to a million, the first channel to a million. Once I got to a million, it's like, right, let's get to 2 million. We're now 20,000 away from 3 million. I want to get to 3 million. I want to make bigger videos. I want to get better views. I want to get bigger guests. I want to have crazier ideas. Like, I think that's my competitiveness in me.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to control because there's a lot more fantastic channels now that are coming out. Like, Bryson's got a channel, Grant Horvath's doing fantastic, good when they hit the scene, they're absolutely smashing it. So it's good, but it also spurs you on. Like, I like competition, but I feel like in a weird way in YouTube I can control that. On the golf course I can't always control it, but like in YouTube world I feel like I know how to make great videos. Let's just keep making great videos.
This episode of Why Golf is brought to you by Skyscanner, the ultimate travel hack that searches billions of prices on flights, hotels, and rental cars, so you can feel confident you'll always find an amazing deal. Now, I end up traveling around the world quite a bit for golf, whether that's leisure to play at that special course or when I'm working, but travel planning can feel overwhelming and pretty stressful. There are so many options for flights, hotels, and cars. Which one is best for me? What is a great deal? Am I missing out on a great option? Right, okay, breathe. This is where Skyscanner comes in, making everything simple and easy. Skyscanner has been helping travellers for over 20 years, and because they are fellow travellers, they never pressure you to book or manipulate prices. And tools like Explore Everywhere or the new Savvy Search AI feature help you explore and find that perfect trip when you don't know where you want to go. I used them recently when I was looking to book a trip to Germany and was amazed with how quick and easy it was. I went to skyscanner.net, searched for my dates and airports, and found exactly what I was looking for with times and prices. And it was also easy to add hotel and car options to my trip too. So when you're booking your next adventure, whether that be to Augusta or Abu Dhabi, St Andrews or Spain, just head to skyscanner.net or download the Skyscanner app to start building your next dream trip away. Amazing deals for flights, hotels and car hire all in one place with one simple search. Skyscanner, proud partner of the Why Golf podcast.
And moving just a little bit away from your role as a YouTuber, we'll touch on your ambassador role with Live Golf as well. But when you first started, when you were 11 and you were on the range, you probably could see the same type of person in each bay, wouldn't you? Stereotypically, a man, a little bit older, playing golf. Do you still tend to see that now, or have you seen it evolve a lot more?
Oh, it's changed so much. Golf has become so cool, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Yeah.
Like, it's so, so cool. Like, you know, interestingly, last weekend, where I live now, there was a festival on, and Justin Timberlake was the headliner. And I ended up reaching out to his management, see if he wanted to come play some golf, this, that, and the other. He couldn't, unfortunately, but I thought he'd maybe come play some golf. I think anybody like that, who cool, modern, people look up to him, lots of women obviously look up to him and admire him. If he's championing golf, it's great for the game. And there's so many more sports people. You look at the style, the trends and the styles that have come out now, it's so much more relaxed and sporty. That the uprise of women's game has been fantastic over the last few years, and it continues to grow. You know, personalities in the world of golf, you know, I really think golf, since COVID, before COVID, but certainly since COVID, has really been an upward trend. It kind of plateaued a little bit, but I'm kind of seeing it go up again, because I just think it's become so much more popular and so much cooler, so much more fun. And again, I think 11-year-old me had a very different perception of golf than 11-year-old me now would have had. You know, my daughter, who's 10, she thinks it's the coolest game in the world. Like, I took her to the Ladies Open at St. Andrews last year, and we got to meet loads of great people. Like, she thinks Mia Baker's the best person in the world. She's like looking, going, she's cool, isn't she? I'm like, yeah, that's golf. Like, this is what golf is now. It's like becoming really trendy, really cool. Mia had this big fluffy, you might have, I don't know if you were there at that time, but big fluffy Adidas jumper on. And my daughter's like, is that golf? I'm like, yeah, that's golf. And it's like, that's great. So any inspiration, you know, hopefully, and you know, I've inspired juniors and kids to get into golf, and what Bryson's doing and what Liv's doing. And it, this is, without question, at Liv Golf, it's a much, much younger audience. I've been around golf. I've been to so many golf tournaments. I love the Open. I love the Masters. I love tournament golf. And it has a crowd. And they'll sit there from 6 in the morning till 10 at night, and they just want to watch golf in the rain, shine, whatever. Here, it's a different audience. They're younger. They come for the entertainment. They come for the music concert. They come for the excitement, the shotgun start, the team element. The space for everybody. It's just different.
What do you think mostly changed that stereotype? Do you credit yourself for that? Because I certainly
I definitely
would.
Don't credit myself.
Yeah,
personally.
You've made it cooler. I've called
Thanks,
your daddy cool
is,
already.
It is 100% me. Me and JT, I think, is the main. But I think sports people. I honestly think sports stars and musicians and actors and celebrities that are not associated with golf showing how much they love golf. I think that's massive for the sport. I really do. And, you know, you look at what Michael Jordan's done, or I mean, obviously Tiger. I mean, Tiger made it so cool. Like, again, back in 97 when Tiger hit the scene, you know, this young bloody superstar who's just dressed a bit different, and it is different to the stereotypical golfer. It's like, this is a breath of fresh air. And then what he did to dominate, and then after that you've obviously got Rory coming through, and then after that you've got Bryson, John Rahm, and now you've got like Scottie Scheffler. It's like, this is all great for the game of golf. And social media has definitely done golf the world of good. Like, I know so many of my friends who are kind of on the borderline of golf. They consume so much golf content. Like, golf content has become a thing now. It's become exciting. And
just yours.
Just mine, exclusively. My friends only watch me. No, it's like they'll watch trick shots or they'll watch crazy actions, or they'll, you know, not that this is the side of golf that we ever want to see, but like clips where bloody there's fighting on a golf course goes viral. It's like, okay, it's not what we want to see, but it's all golf. Like, it's all getting people to think golf and think, oh, maybe I'll give that a go. Not the fighting, but like the social side of it.
Well, tell me about your Live Golf ambassador role, because that came about at the start of the year, didn't it? How's it been, and how did that come about?
So it's been conversations for a long time. We started kind of probably early last year. We originally were going to launch it for JCB last year, so about this time last year. Didn't quite work out, so we kind of pushed it to the end of the year. They want to promote their players. They want to promote the league. They want to promote the venues. You know, we had a chat, and it was like, would you be interested in coming on board? And I was like, well, am I going to get access to players and teams and great venues? They were like, yes, yes, yes. And it just made sense. It was just like, well, let's do it. You know, this is such a great, cool opportunity. Before I joined, I did have some reservations around Live. I didn't think it was perfect. I think it's improving all the time with Scott O'Neill, the new CEO that's just come in. I did an interview with him last week, and I think the league's in incredibly safe hands. I think what he brings from other sports and other backgrounds is only going to continue the growth. It's so early. Like, we've just done 3 seasons, the 4th season. It's so early in its infancy. It's going to take time to build, but it's different and it's exciting. So, yeah, I get to travel the world. I've been to, like I say, been to so many amazing places this year. I've got to play with so many great pros. You know, I've become, not that this is my ambition. My ambition is not to come and be their best mates, but like, I become friendly with them, and I walk around and I'm like rubbing shoulders with John Rahm and Bryson and Phil and all these guys. It's like they've kind of become pals, you know, and it's nice, and it makes filming so much easier. Like, I filmed with Poulter yesterday, and it's like we've been mates for years, and actually, a couple of months ago, he started a YouTube channel and he invited me around to his place in Florida. And he was like picking my brains about what should we do and how can I, and I sat there in a very different role. I wasn't in front of camera. I was actually kind of helping him with his presenting style and helping him with his YouTube direction. It was like, this is quite cool. Like, who would have thought, you know, we've got Ryder Cup legend, you know, Ian Poulter asking for my advice on how can he make better YouTube videos. I was like, this is so cool. So, it's different. The audience reaction was very mixed at first. We lost about 30 odd thousand subscribers.
So when you'd really keep tabs on that? You kind of, it was quite obvious.
They're personal friends of mine, every subscriber.
Really?
Every subscriber's a personal friend, all 3 million of them. Yeah. You know, I'd send them postcards and Christmas cards. So anytime I lose one, I'm gutted. But like, I've seen the numbers going, oh, don't go, because I knew what was coming. I knew that there was going to be great content. And since that, we've, since losing that 30, we've gained them and got five times more than that back. And a lot of people do leave comments now and go, you know what? I was a bit hasty when I unsubscribed back in February. I love seeing this content and it's great and it's grown on me. It's not what I expected. I think they thought maybe it was going to be very kind of like live golf. Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's just that we're filming at these amazing golf courses with amazing pros. Live golf is the vehicle to do that.
How hard is it not to take it personally at first when that happens?
So hard.
Because you said at the beginning, when you first started out, you'd reply to everything, every single comment. I can imagine you probably don't do that so much now.
It's a bit tougher.
Of the millions. But yeah, how tough was that?
It's hard. It's really, really hard. Like, you know, it would have been naive of me to expect no backlash. You know, I'd expected backlash because change causes backlash anyway, doesn't it? And I did an exercise the day before I did the announcement. I actually wrote down on a piece of paper every negative comment that could be left. And I thought, I'll just write them all down. And I thought, if anyone writes anything worse than that, fair play. So I just literally wrote every negative comment I'd expect to receive, potentially. And then afterwards, any time I saw a comment that was worse than that, I was like, fair play. I didn't think about that one. So it's kind of like I tried to twist the narrative a little bit. I don't ever want to upset fans. You know, if fans have been watching for numbers of years and hopefully they've really enjoyed the content, I've never done anything, and this decision wasn't ever to say, right, I've done with you guys now, I'm off. It was never the idea. I saw it as an opportunity to continue to make great content. Nothing was really going to change. The facts of we're going to get more access to great players and great venues. I don't see any real downside on it, but that's not how everyone saw it. But like I say, I feel like we've converted a lot of people, if not all of them, back to watching the channel anyway.
So that was the reason behind the transition and joining Live Golf. It was more that you could have access to players and it would just be a bit of an easier situation, really.
It's just a bit more guaranteed. Yeah, of course it is. You know, there's when I was trying to work relationships with, and I've been very, very lucky over the time of YouTube, like Tommy Fleetwood has been fantastic with his time. He's been on the channel a number of times. But like a lot of the time trying to reach out to players was hard. Like sometimes it'd be easy. Like I sent a DM to Ricky Fowler one time and he replied back saying, yeah, I'm up for it. And it was almost like no interactions. And before we knew it, we were out on the golf course filming. I was like, that seemed easy. Not everyone's like that. It's hard to get players on the channel. It's hard to go through management and agencies and, you know, there's sometimes a lot of red tape and it's like, oh, this is hard. Like, I don't want this to be as hard. Where, you know, well, instead of me saying, can you come to the UK or me come to you? Well, we're here anyway together. Like on a Monday, on a practice day, you can come and play around the golf. I'm going to play with you. We have a little match. We're going to film it. It's great. So it's been super. And like say, the guests I've had on the channel so far this year, I've filmed with almost every player this year in some capacity, which is amazing. Like you think how many major winners there's been. I mean, you know, every corner you turn, it's like, oh my God, there's another major winner, there's another superstar, there's another young talent. And it's like, you know, I've got access to all these guys and they're very willing to come on the channel and make content.
Golf's quite a small world, isn't it? But the more you're in it, the longer you're in it, you get to know so many people and you do know so many people. But when you first started on Live, probably you knew a lot of the players and you said they've become some of your friends now. But was it like first at school vibes almost? You think this big announcement happened and unraveled and it was a bit like walking into the unknown?
Definitely. I knew a number of familiar faces, so I felt a little bit of a safety net. But I, you know, very much this is their this is their terrain. This is their tournament. Like, and I'm not coming in. I'm never, if the range is busy, I'm not jumping on the range, barging people out of the way, saying this is my spot. Like, it's their tournament. They're here playing for a lot of money, and you know, they want to play great golf. So I'm very much in the background. I come here early in the week. I get all my filming done pre-Thursday. I don't mess about with the pro-am, and I'm out of here. So by Friday, you're not seeing me because, you know, I will stay somewhere, but I'm not filming content. I'll come and watch the tournament sometimes. But it's like, I'm coming in here early. I'm getting my stuff done. Often when I arrive on the Sunday or the Monday, nobody's here, which is great. Tuesday, it starts to get busier. Wednesday, today, it gets a lot busier. But like, I then tone my filming commitments down. So I'm busy early in the week. And then as the tournament comes together, I tone it down because it's not my tournament. It's your tournament. Like, I'm just here to complement it and make content.
And the fact that you are friends with some of the guys now, and that is really your USP, isn't it, Rick? The fact that you can connect to all these audiences, because it looks like you're having fun with your mates.
Yeah.
You've got all these great ideas. And as you mentioned, your 3 million subscribers, they're all your friends. So how important is that connection to kind of generate and resonate on all your videos?
I think it's really important. Like you said before about whether you go and chop it around and play, it's relatable. Golf's bloody hard. Like, as much as we love golf, and you know, golf has given me so many great things, like it's given me my life. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, I'm so happy for that interaction of being on the driving range, that one time when I was left on my own. Like, that's changed and shaped my whole life. So I respect golf so much, but it's bloody hard. Mm. And I think people understand that. And I think, you know, I the content that I show is warts and all. Like, I show great shots and I'm buzzing, because it's like, even I get buzzing over great shots. I hit bad shots and go, that's golf. Like, what do you do about it? And I've been hard on myself sometimes, and I think that's putting a lot of pressure on myself. I've come into this year so much more relaxed. Like, I think, who cares if you hit a bad shot? I'm not playing for millions like these guys. I'm here to make content. And if the content's not fun, what's the point?
That content probably does better if you're not playing your best game.
Yeah.
People want to see that, don't they?
But you've also got to laugh it off. So I think the relatability side is that I know my limitations. I know I'm not the greatest golfer in the world. And, you know, again, 14-year-old Rick would have thought he was, but I know I'm not. I know where I sit in the ecosystem of golf. I love what I do. I love making videos. Like, that's my niche. You know, I'm excited about the future of YouTube golf. It's continued to grow. I am still competitive in that world. I still love playing golf. Like, literally teeing up here on Monday morning, I was like a kid in the sweet shop. I'm like, getting to play Valderrama. And not only that, it's all documented.
It's your first time playing.
My first time. But it's like, in 10 years, I can sit down and watch that video. And I'll show my kids for the 100th time. This is when Daddy chopped it around Valderrama. But it's like, there's memories there. And it's like, it's a really unique opportunity. And I'm so blessed for it. And I'm so grateful for the fans and the viewers who watch the videos, and grateful for all the time that the pro, they don't have to do it. They could say no, but they want to do it. They understand the value of it. And literally playing with Poulter yesterday, the pinch me moments, but he's like, he's just, these guys are so nice. They also get content, which I think, 10 years ago, they wouldn't have done. Now they get it a lot more.
You're the new postman. You're delivering for Poulter. You're helping him out.
I'm not sure. Not sure about that.
You mentioned the future of golf in there. So what does the future of golf look like? Because you, as an 11-year-old boy, to looking at how golf is now, you probably wouldn't have expected it to be like this, especially here at LIV. So where do you think it's going?
I still think there's gaps in the market to continue to help grow golf. So driving ranges are fantastic. I think Top Golfs are brilliant. I think even the miniature golf, crazy golfs, fantastic. I still think there's a bridge between those areas and golf. Like, for me, there needs to be this kind of stepping stone where there's this transitional period, because the number of people that go into Top Golf is wild.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
really crazy. Yeah. You go to the one in Dubai, you go to the one in Vegas, like, they're packed out.
Not Watford.
Watford.
Don't miss out on
that. Was like the original one, wasn't it? But then where do they go from there? Like, I feel like there needs to be this stepping stone of, like, there needs to be like little six-hole golf courses in cities, and there needs to be accessible, and needs to have no dress code, it needs to be fairly cheap, and it needs to be fun, and it needs to be entertaining, it needs to be music and all these other things. Like, I feel like at the moment we've got two ends of the spectrum doing really well. People who are in golf so much golf to play. And golf is affordable. Golf clubs have got cheaper. You can go to Costco and buy golf clubs now. You can go to a sports shop and buy golf clubs. It's brilliant. I think golf has never been in a better position for that. You can go and play cheap golf. You can play expensive golf as well, and people want to, but you can play cheap golf. You can learn how to play golf totally for free on YouTube. Like, it's totally for free. You can learn how to play golf. But at the moment, that transition of going to a driving range, then going onto an 18-hole golf course, it's massive. Like this, I've never been really skied. Do you ski?
I've skied.
What's like the first slope that you'd ever go on?
I mean, I skied at school years ago, and all I remember is this, is the what's it called? The pizza, the snowplow, just going down there.
Oh, really?
Like, no, yeah, I've not coordinated really. In that,
well, either
in that
way, you've got like different levels of slopes, haven't you? You've got the black slope, which is like the hardest. In golf at the moment, I think we're doing really good at the easy slopes, and we're doing really good at the hard slopes. There's nothing in the middle.
Yeah.
And I feel if that bridge got fixed, I think we'd see such an influx of golf. And also, why can't that be golf? Why can't 6 holes that takes an hour, why can't that be golf? Could be golf. Like that 18-hole stroke play doesn't have to be just the only golf. Like, I do quantify mini golf and adventure golf. The other area of golf that I think is very undervalued at the moment is VR golf. I don't know if you've tried it yet.
Yeah, it makes me a bit dizzy.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
I think it's unbelievable. I think if that, again, I see that's being golf. People putting our headset, designing golf courses or playing golf courses that already exist with the friends from a different place around the world. I think it's very realistic. I think it'll continue to get better. That's golf. In my head, that's golf. I know you're not hitting a ball, but you're doing everything you can still. You've still got the morals and the values of golf. It's all about being honest and being respectful and, you know, playing by the rules and all this. They all still are in there, but it's you're not playing 5 hours on the golf course, walking around the golf course. It might only take you half an hour to play 18 holes. Brilliant. That's great. So I think, for me, that's the future of golf. It's golf isn't just 18 holes on a golf course, championship golf course. For me, golf is anything where you're hitting a ball with a real golf club or a virtual golf club in any capacity. And I think that if that continues to grow, we're in a really good spot.
Do you think we ever will see it change from 18 holes? Because when I play a round of golf, I get to 12.
Yeah, 12's great.
And I'm mentally
done. How good's 12?
I'm hungry. 12 is brilliant. It's like, that's the best part of your game to 12, and then it just goes downhill from there.
I love 12 holes. It's great. I say, if you made these 6-hole golf courses, you could do it twice, and there's your 12. Like, I think there's a gap in the market to make golf an hour to 2 hours long. And if you can do that, I think it's perfect. The challenge is, a lot of golf courses have been designed where you go out for 9, you come back, you go out for 9, you come back. You can't play 12. Like, there's no way of doing that. I think golf courses, if you would design them all again now, you probably would think about that. You do three loops of 6. So you would come back after 6 or 12 or 18 if you want to. You've got that option. But obviously golf courses were designed hundreds of years ago that didn't have that idea in mind.
And what about for competitive golf in terms of going forward for the golf that we see on TV, on the different respective tours? Can we see that being condensed, or do you think there's too much history involved?
I think that I'd love it to be. I asked the question to Scott O'Neill last week, and you know, I'm not saying there's any real answers to that, but he went to school with Brian Rolapp, the new PGA CEO. Like, they went to business school together. You think, okay, there's new guards that are taking place on these tours. Like, you know, Jay Monahan's going to be stepping down. Greg Norman's obviously just stepped down from Liver CEO. So it's like, maybe there's new blood coming through. Maybe can Scott O'Neill and Brian Rolapp make something work? Who knows? You've got Trevor Immelman, who's the chairman of the world ranking. It's like, well, put those three guys in a room, let's see what happens. You know, I think there's definitely room. I don't know how it could look, but I think there's room for everything. I don't think it has to be one thing. I think there's, you know, a bit like cricket. I'm not the biggest cricket fan in the world, but you've got your test cricket, you've got your 2020 cricket, you've got these other things. All works. Or you can have that with golf. Like, you can have your 4 rounds major tournaments, you can have your live golf, you can have other aspects of golf. It can all work. It doesn't have to be one thing, really.
Well, you've brought so much to the game of golf, especially in the modern game, whether it be on YouTube, but also charity as well. You do a lot of charity work, don't you?
I have done, yeah. I really love, you know, again, I've been given this amazing platform. So, you know, if I can help people as much as I can, I will.
But the great thing about golf and charity, they align so nicely. It's such a good combination, because how many charity golf days are there
so
in
many.
A year? How many Do you get involved in many?
I don't go to that many because it's a bit of a tight schedule. But, you know, it's great. I think it's, you know, again, when I used to work at MIA, I used to see charity golf days all the time. And it's like you learn so much about who these charities are supporting. You know, it's like it's amazing. Like as much money golf can raise for charities, it's fantastic. You know, I've done quite a few things for Prostate Cancer UK. Not that only recently I've had someone more personally affected by it, but more than anything, it's like it kind of aligns with my audience, male of a certain age. It's like, well, actually, if I am going to promote anything for a charity, why not it be that? So I did a charity walk across Scotland a couple of years ago where I walked from Prestwick over to St Andrews carrying my golf clubs. That was amazing. I then cycled from St Andrews to Royal Liverpool, which was fantastic. I've just a couple of weeks ago I played 100 holes in a day.
That's a long YouTube video.
5.5 rounds. I was done after 12, by the way.
Battery ended.
5.5 rounds. Yeah, we didn't make a video there. But that I did that with my cameraman, Ben, who is from Australia. Unfortunately, his dad's got diagnosed with prostate cancer last year. So it's like, well, yeah, let's do something. It's great. So, you know, as much as I can, I'll do as much as I can for charity because I think it's, you know, it's really important to do so.
So this is the point, Rick, where I ask you the curveball questions. It's okay. Three quick fires. Are you ready?
How curveball are these curveballs? You're not prepping me on these.
I haven't blinked in 2 minutes. No, it's very simple. What's the most frequent tip that you give when you're coaching?
That's a great point. It sounds a bit boring, but grip. Like so many people get the grip wrong. It's the fundamentals. And it's really boring, but get a good grip and you're off for a good start.
I know Valderrama's been a bit of a tough test playing it. I've heard so many trees. But what's the toughest course you've ever played on?
Oh, the toughest course. There's a couple in the UK, actually. One called Rockcliffe Hall.
Sounds tough.
It's near Newcastle. It's really, really hard.
A lot of rocks.
Not a lot of rocks, but not a lot of cliffs. But it's called Rockcliffe Hall. There is a hall. Really, really, really long, tough golf course. I played off like the bat teams. I played at... this is hard, to be honest. This is one of the hardest courses I've played. Even though it's not long, it just shows like a long course doesn't need, you know... A short course can be tough because there's loads of trees, tiny, tiny greens, rough stick. Where else have I played that's really tough? They're probably the two that stand out.
This is funny. It's quick fire questions, but me and you could just go on browse going.
I know, I'm sorry.
No, I'm joking. No, I love it. What's the most fun you've had filming a YouTube video? Which one was it and why?
Oh, most fun.
They're all going to be watching carefully here.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, a lot of them are great. I do. I think the one that I really, real pinch me moment, I got the opportunity to play St Andrews in reverse. So historically, do you know the story about St Andrews in reverse?
No.
So historically, St Andrews, currently right now, you would play anti-clockwise. Yeah. So you play down the first, second, but that's not always the case. Once upon a time, it was played in clockwise order. So you'd start on the first and you actually go to the 17th green. That was the first hole. And then you go from the 18th tee to the 16th green and so on and so forth. And it's the only golf course that Tiger Woods, before he passed away, it's a weird way of saying it, but before he dies, he wants to play. It's on his bucket list. He wants to play the old course in reverse. So we got special permission to go and film there. I filmed with Minwoo Lee there a couple of years ago. And it was on a Sunday. And again, the old course on Sundays are closed. Like you can go and literally have a picnic on the 18th fairway on a Sunday. The golf course is closed. We got special permission to go out on a Sunday morning. We got to play it in reverse. And it was honestly stunned that tee. And I was playing with hickory clubs and Minwoo Lee was playing with his own clubs. It was the one time I was like, how the hell am I stood here right now? How has YouTube got me to stand here? Because this is weird. Like this is literally a once in a lifetime opportunity. And so I think as much as I was nervous and as much as it was fun, it was super fun. It was like, I think almost retrospectively, I look back at that with really fond memories going, that's crazy. How was I allowed to do that? Because that is a real special opportunity.
Who was guiding you? What's the course map like on that one?
They have a course
planner.
They do.
Yeah,
they have a course planner reversed.
Oh, right.
So more recently, it's becoming more of a popular thing. And once a year now, they open it up to do that. But before that, it doesn't happen very often. I think it happened every 5 years. And that's an organised event. We were the only two golfers out there on a Sunday. Every resident of St Andrews got a letter on that particular about that Sunday saying, just to let you know, between these these hours, the golf course will be closed. And literally, because normally it's dog walkers, picnic and everything else.
The red carpet on there for you, did you?
It's, honestly, it was amazing. It was a really special opportunity.
And this brings me down to my final question, which is pretty obvious. Why golf?
I mean, it sounds like an obvious, but it's a tough answer, isn't it, really?
Because it's like, it could be anything, like why the game's so great, or why more people getting into it now.
I think for me, why golf? If someone was saying why would I get into golf? For me, it's what it teaches you. It's what it teaches you and the friends that you make. Like most of my contacts, most of my friends, if I went through my phone book, 80%, if not 90% of my contacts are people that I've met through golf. People who I've become incredibly friendly with and you know, I class as like my best mates, my work colleagues are all addicted to golf. Golf has been my life. So I think that's one of the things. And then what it teaches you respect, you know, from such a young age. I felt very comfortable around adults and speaking to adults and shaking hands and being respectful of the rules and understanding resilience, like it doesn't always go your way and how do you learn from that. So I think it's the life lessons it teaches you. So the friends and the life lessons. And then also it's bloody awesome. Like it's hard, it's really bloody hard, but it's awesome.
When other opportunities would you go and play with like an 80-year-old man on a course? And
it's amazing.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't do that in a pub, would you?
No, and what I like about that is that, you know, you could play in any golf day or whatever it may be, and four of you would get put together, you know, you, me, and two other people get put together. We might not know each other, great formal, that well. At the end of it, we all know each other great. And it's like, you know so much more about people. And I think, again, it's what I've been very lucky enough to spend time with great players. Like you've put a camera on them, you ask them all sorts of questions, and you learn so much more about them. It's great.
It's been great to chat.
You too.
I wonder if you speak more words or walk more steps.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Moment.
It's a tough one, that one, isn't it? Jesus, yeah. Probably 10,000 words a minute.
I love it. It's my job easy. Very nice.
Thanks for having me on.
So if Di was here, she'd be asking me why golf. So I've got to do her proud. So my why golf is, it's the fact that golf actually brings everybody together. So I can be playing with someone who's 85, if they're in good health, and it doesn't matter. So it brings all people of ages and backgrounds, and you can bond over things, which you probably wouldn't meet people that you play on the golf course with in everyday life. So the same goes into the work that I do, interviews. I wouldn't be able to do that in the middle of a football game, would I? Wouldn't happen. So the fact I get to interview players, high profiles, live, in the middle of their rounds, it's an amazing thing. Well, sadly, guys, that's all we've got time for. But if you did like what you listened to, make sure you subscribe off your favourite podcast provider. Other than this, also, we have our other platforms, Instagram, TikTok, This Is Why Golf, to find more future episodes. Also, thisiswhygolf.com to delve deep into other benefits that golf has to offer. Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode of Why Golf podcast brought to you by Skyscanner. We'll see you soon.